And good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Workgroup. I'm Mike Theory, I'm with ONC, and we are always glad that you could be with us today. And I'd like to do a special thanks again today to our co-chairs and our workgroup members for all their hard work on these recommendations on the draft US CDI version 3, which will be, those recommendations will be presented to the HITAC tomorrow. So we're looking forward to that. As a reminder, your feedback is always welcomed, which can be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. I'm going to begin roll call of our workgroup members, so when I call your name, please indicate that you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Arianne Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldrich.
Hi, everyone.
Hans Buttendeck. Thomas Cantalina or Jeff Ford. Christina Caraballo.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Stephen Eichner.
Good morning.
Sanjeev Tandon.
Good morning.
Raj Gavarti. Tim Durgis. And Kamota. Leslie Leonard. Hung Lu.
Good morning.
David McCauley.
Hello.
I'm McDonald. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber. Abby Sears.
Good morning.
And Ram Sharam. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. And Hans, now please join me in welcoming Stephen and Arianne for their opening remarks.
Hey, Hans knows that he's on, so he just had trouble getting off mute. All right. As Stephen gets his computer rebooted, we are going to focus on we've got the final or the near final recommendations. So we've gotten a number of folks who've emailed some corrections to the final recommendations. So if the task force members or the workgroup members have any comments on the recommendations draft that we have, I think we'll start initially by talking about that, but we want to spend most of the time thinking about the ISA prioritization and the topics. We've gotten a fair number of votes already on our proposed topics for the ISA portion of our work plan. So we're going to start doing some pre-planning for the deliberation that we want for the next set of recommendations that we are obligated to provide back to HITAC. So with that, Stephen, unless you want to verbal anything else, we should jump into it.
Thank you, Arianne, for kicking us off. Yeah, and again, just add my thanks to others for the input that we've gotten. We got actually some really important feedback on the draft document that we sent out from a couple of you and are making some adjustments accordingly. So anybody want to raise their hand and jump in with any additional comments besides what you've effectively sent us through the email? If not, all the better. That will give us more time. I think Arianne and I are going to be presenting there we go. Kelly's
got it. Yeah, Kelly's got her hand up.
Yeah, hi, everyone. Thank you. I was reviewing the documents, and I know that we had we're looking to be able to not be a garbage in, garbage out, right? So we all know this. And one of the things that we have to be mindful of is being able to quantify who is doing the documentation for person-centered care. And I didn't see anything reflected with the unique nurse identifier that we had a pretty good discussion around. And maybe it comes at a different point, so I wasn't sure if I should bring it up or not, but I just look to you all to give me some guidance on where that fits. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Kelly. And I don't know if Al wants to bring up that that particular recommendation, but my recollection of the language, I don't have it in front of me, was that we wanted to be able to identify the individuals using any number of identifiers that are available, and we didn't specify specific ones. I think we perhaps made reference to a couple, but if we have a little list there, we could add the nursing identifier to that. I don't know what other people think. Let me pull up those documents.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the discussion. This is very meaningful as we look at safety and quality outcomes associated with patient data. And this is a policy initiative that we have been working on for at least 5 years now with the big data group out of Minnesota. And again, it has very meaningful implications for the nursing community.
Yeah, I don't think that we would be referencing it specifically as a component of USCDI, but rather as a potential value set that could be used to identify individuals.
Great, thank you.
Al, do you want to jump in on that one? Are you here? You may be having the kind of morning that I was having. All right, we'll make note of that, Kelly, and go back and look where that opportunity might be. There you go.
I'm back. What I wasn't sure about was if the recommendation was to specify unique nurse identifier as part of the care team member identifier. We currently don't have any specifications for identifier for care team member identifier. I wasn't sure if that's what you meant by, or that's where you thought you might capture that.
Yeah, so if that's to me, yes, that's where I thought that we would capture it. The quality and safety initiatives were very easily able to catch capture the provider input because it's associated with billing. But there are other care team members associated with quality and safety outcomes. And so I actually defer to you all. Where do you feel that's the best
care team member? Yeah, care team member identifier is already in USCDI V2. So I think this is a question really for the value set or the definitions of what goes into care team member identifier. We may want to at some point contemplate that care team member identifier, like we have in other places, is a combination of assigning authority and value. But NPI is often used, but we could also use nursing identifiers in the care team member identifier. So I think the good news is it's already in USCDI V2, and this is mostly a question for structuring the representation of an identifier to make sure that it accommodates multiple types of identifiers.
And I knew that we had had a discussion about that with Clem sort of leading the charge, but we did not end up with a specific recommendation about it.
I think we had a good discussion on facility identifier and settled on a facility or organization identifier with that same structure of combination of authority and identifier attached to the encounter. But as I said, care team member identifier is already contemplated in V2.
So Kelly,
along with the care team member identifier, the care team member role, which would cap the combination of those two. I mean, care team member role doesn't define the assigning authority like unique nurse identifier or NPI would, but we do. So those two things go together to identify, you know, which part of the care team member. But again, neither one of them have a specified standard or like constraining it to just NPI or just unique nurse identifier.
So what I was going to add, and then Clem will call on you, was just, Kelly, there's certainly an opportunity to add a public comment on that care team member data element. There are only a couple in there right now. And that would be a good route to go, perhaps. Clem?
I just want to reinforce what Dave McCullough just said, but you know, this, these are to be dynamic and local, and whether one couldn't use, you know, cell phone numbers or email addresses, as is often, which is done in a lot of circumstances, and bigger deals than that. You know, I just to finish it up, my TurboTax, and that's how they identify me, or at least how I get in. So we might, but that may be, I don't know if that'll fit, but it's certainly an easy thing to do.
Yeah, so Clem, just as a point, one of the an additional data element within the care team member data class is care team member telecom. So that's going to include both phone number and email, possibly website URL as well.
Yeah, but yeah, the Davis point's really that again, just anything where we have an identifier, we should always have an assigning authority that's uniquely identified via URI or other member, CUID or other method. And that by doing so, we'd be able to accommodate nursing identifiers as well as NPIs.
Right. And I'll just throw in there, this isn't like something that changes. When you sit for your boards, you're assigned this unique identifier from the International Board State Council. And so I just want to point that out. This isn't something that changes. So thank you.
Yeah, but that's if it's issued by an entity, not a different type of care member where there isn't a certifying authority or central authority that's a licensing board or something of that ilk. That being said, I think using a telco number is also not a really good idea because phone numbers do change in personal life, or we're looking at having to disclose a phone number or cell number that really isn't appropriate for the use of something we probably don't want to go into at this level, but leave it as a placeholder. There does need to be some identifier and a combination between some issuing entity and a unique number underneath that is probably sufficient.
And Kelly, I'll also add that both provider NPI and DEA are listed as level 2 data elements that, you know, could potentially be advanced into a version of USCDI. So what you and a constituency may want to do is try to advance that nursing number, get it on the table, you know, through the website so that it can be leveled next time around.
Yeah. Okay. I would prefer, just from a standards perspective, I would prefer to have the notion of a combination of assigning authority and identifier, and then have a list of core identifier assigning authorities so that we can accommodate NPI, we can accommodate a DEA number and accommodate an NCSBN. Okay, exactly. Cool.
Or in the case of like a Texas peer provider network for mental health services, if there's a peer provider ID in that space as well, because we happen to license or certify peer providers for behavioral health services. So that's another potential to fit into Arian's matrix.
Great. And I don't think we're here to expand the scope of our prior recommendations. We just wanted to get any further feedback on the recommendations as drafted, knowing that we'll be back again next year to do this again.
All right. So any other any other corrections or amendments to the recommendations as stated? Otherwise, we will move on to the ISA portion.
Excellent.
Awesome. Let's go on to the ISA portion. So I think everybody knows the ISA portion, but generally what we're looking to do is update the ISA and make sure that we're feeding the ISA with important standards and interoperability specifications, implementation guidance, and others that are important for interoperability. And as a reminder, just because we've been so deeply enmeshed in the USCDI portion, the way I think about this is USCDI defines the standard catalog of data with respect to which interoperability occurs. And the ISA portion describes the, so think about the USCDI as the noun, and then the ISA portion are the verbs associated with exchange. So you know, generally, we want to think about USCDI as bounding the information that wants to get exchanged and the ISA describing the use cases and implementation specifications according to which data are exchanged in between settings on behalf of the patient or providers for purpose of improving care or health. Boy, that upfront statement occasioned three separate hand raises. So we'll go in order. David, what did I say wrong?
You know, I think you said it right, but I think there's some subtlety there that we struggled to try to clarify in last year's group that I just want to make sure things haven't changed. Maybe Mike can comment on it. The addition of a new standard to the ISA is one thing, and if there are standards that should be a part of ISA, that's straightforward for us to recommend that. But the other more subtle thing is to address high priority uses. I think we took it last year to mean we could identify areas where we need a standard, but the standard doesn't exist yet. So the use itself can be added as an area of focus. And that's different from finding a standard that exists and saying it ought to be in the ISA.
Yeah, David, I think that's a fantastic clarification. Thank you for that. And yes, that's definitely how we interpreted our charge last time, was to identify both areas of emerging use of standards as well as categories of exchange, even if there wasn't a standard. And so in some cases, for example, in our work on research, we identified research as a need and then listed multiple standards. And we certainly are open to adding high priority areas, even in areas where there aren't existing standards and implementation guidance. Clem.
So both David and I were on the early ISA committee, and the early committee, I think, was doing the same thing as HITECH. You know, we basically had an approval process, put them in, but it was broader. It included, you know, not just code systems, but also messages, et cetera. So, but that's evolved because now ISA is really a free-for-all, right? Anybody can put anything in there. Isn't that, that's my understanding at present. So
I don't think so, Clem. This is the process by which most things get added. I think that ONC can certainly add things, but I don't think it's meant to be quite the open door that USCDI is designed to be. Al, maybe you can clarify.
Well, it's maybe somewhere in between. It's not a the feature of USCDI, which allows open comment and open submissions, does not exist in the ISA, but the content that's added based on really anybody's input that seems reasonable. It is all of the input is vetted and then entered by ONC, by the different ambassadors for the different areas of the ISA. So it's not quite pre-for-all, Clem, but it's pretty open to any available standards.
I'll accept that.
Whether they're standards, I know that you didn't mean it like that, but whether they're you know, required, optional, never heard from, never heard of before, like they all can go in there just as a place to go to look for different standards in different areas.
No, I accept that, but I just want to highlight though that Joe Blow can type something in there, and that's part of the ISO for at least a while.
I lost Clem.
No, he's here.
Okay.
No, Clem, although approved users can enter comments on both ISA and USCDI, but approved users cannot enter new interoperability needs in the ISA. That has to be done by ONC.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Let's go on to Hans.
I would like to get a little bit more clarification around the purpose of the ISA. To have clarity around that, because the interpretation of how the ISA is used might also influence what we suggest to put in there or not. And it's our understanding that the purpose of the ISA is primarily to identify four different use cases, hopefully at least what USCDI covers, but it can go well beyond that at this point in time, to identify standards that are either best known or in progress, but there is not a requirement to use them. It is a place to go to investigate what you might or could use, but it's not in itself a requirement that it should be used. or shall be used, I should say. Not until you get to a certification program or to another program where the actual requirement is documented and stated on which standard out of the ISA, or perhaps another one, it need not be in the ISA, is being used. So I think we have to be careful on what the meaning is of something being in ISA, that you cannot conclude that therefore everybody immediately adopts it. And that has its positives and negatives. Positive is that I like the idea that it could be a placeholder for a place where there is no implementation guide or standard, where you want to fill out, or where you can have a variety of standards to indicate these are commonly known or used or the best available, but it might still not be mature enough to go into a regulatory or other program. And I think that's a unique characteristic of the ISA, that it's that library of what's out there, and that we should be aware of, that it's the latest and best known. And that's a good purpose, but it's beyond that, not an immediate indication that it shall be used and that everybody will adopt it immediately.
Yeah, I think maybe just a couple of things there. Number one is, yes, there's no tie between the ISA, there is no implication that inclusion of something in the ISA is ipso facto a certification criteria or a shall. The ISA does have, and this is based on multiple recommendations of multiple incarnations of ISA work groups, does have a maturity scale. So the ISA accommodates the maturity of standards, and at least one of the purposes of the ISA is as a catalog, where if people want to solve a problem, they can look up in the ISA the best way to solve that problem based on maturity and adoption. The other place that the ISA can be used is to serve as a catalog with respect to future certification needs. That is, it would, to the extent that there is a set of certification criteria, you'd want to draw those certification criteria from the ISA. But no, Hans, I think that's right. It's a place where its primary purpose is a catalog. Primary purpose is a catalog to inform stakeholders about how to solve a particular problem using standards. And as a place for tracking the maturity of the underlying standards implementation guidance. Stephen suggests that we just show on screen the ISA, so whoever's controlling the screen may want to do that. Al, you've got a comment.
I just wanted to add, I think that Hans' explanation and your clarification was really good. The only thing I would add to that is that there is a piece of the ISA that shows it's whether or not a particular displayed standard is required. And then the point about the issue, the maturity and the adoption, those are similar but not perfectly aligned with the leveling criteria in the USCDI. And that might be something to look at as to whether or not to align those two. So there's a maturity, which is a broad topic. There's adoption level, and then there's requiredness. There's a requiredness field within the ISA standards.
Yeah.
So it does include that. And then it points to where the requirement is, whether it's in certification or CMS reporting or CDC. There is that link as well.
That's right. And David and I will go back to the famous Dixie and Hin Power Team work group, where we created a framework and rubric for assessing the maturity, which has mostly been adopted into the ISA. Christina.
Yep. I was just going to say, I think there is an opportunity for us to make recommendations on how to better tie ISA to USCDI. I think going back to a couple of comments Al made, looking at the adoption level in ISA, it's still a little unclear to me how this is determined. It might be interesting to do an exercise on how that it could map to kind of the levels in USCDI. Also in the federally required part, we have a simple yes, no. adding which federal requirements are needed could be another area that we could recommend expanding the ISA, and also potentially noting if it's required in US CDI. I think there is an opportunity for the US CDI to, for ISA to be like that encyclopedia, but also help feed and identify things for US CDI. If we have a really nice alignment and we can pull out of ISA for US CDI when appropriate, I think that's just going to be a stronger to be able to tie them together.
Okay. Emerging, just a bunch of emerging, really interesting bits. So first of all, completely agree. And I believe that's the reason why we wanted to combine what formerly were two task forces into a single work group, because updating the ISA and updating US CDI feel like things that want to go on in concert. I see Han sort of echoing your comment that, you know, inclusion and certification criteria, formally we thought we had one set of certification criteria. As we evolve the certification program, it's likely that we have multiple sets of certification criteria and multiple sets of agencies and programmatics that want to get tied to certification. It'd be useful to have a more specific set of inclusion. Hans and I are going back on practically whether ISA inclusion is a requirement to include in certification or not. I would imagine it would be sort of a policy failure if you had something that was included in a certification criteria that wasn't included in the ISA. But as Hans notes, this may not have been formally specified as a requirement. Stephen.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, just peeking into ISA right now, for example, I pulled up cognitive status, and while it is in there, there's no mention on that page that it has been contemplated as part of draft V3. So I think just echoing Christina's comment that it would be good to have more of a tight linkage so that ISA changes are made to reflect what's going on in US CDI. And then also just agreeing with what you were saying, Arian, I think it does make sense that something belongs in ISA with the appropriate specified standards before we add it to US CDI and before we add it to certification.
Yeah, that's right. This is sort of a meta ISA portion where we want to really contemplate, and I think the US CDI group has done this in the past, and the ISA work groups have done this in the past, really want to contemplate not just inclusion of things in the ISA, but also the process and framework under which the ISA exists. And there are some things that I suspect are going to be non-regulatory advice. I don't think ONC is going to want to limit its activities in terms of certification, but it would be useful to state that it would be normal practice for the ISA to be the catalog from which certification criteria would be drawn. All right, seeing no further hands up, maybe we can go to the prioritization spreadsheet.
And just real thanks to the ONC for putting this together. What they pulled forward was the items that I think were still in play at the end of your work group last year. Is that right, Arian?
Yeah, that's right. The catalog that we drew from was the catalog that we entered into this work group iteration based on ONC prioritization and activities that were underway. The catalog from the previous incarnation of the ISP task force that was the formerly standalone task force focused on ICE updates, and that was the set of high priority activities that we did not get a chance to get to. And then the inclusion of the HIPAA right to amendment and standards and certification associated with that. So if we go to the next slide.
There we go.
There we go, yeah. So we've included all of these in the prioritization spreadsheet. I think we've got a little more than half of the folks on the work group who have filled out prioritization just on a scan.
May be up to two thirds now.
I'm actually looking at a live view. I believe last edit was seconds ago. So if you haven't put your updates in, this would be a good time to go do that. And then I created a very simple just sum across the priorities to give an indication about whether what categories appear to be getting broad support. David, you have a question?
I was just going to caution that you should take my prioritization a little bit with a grain of salt, because I wasn't sure what all of these things actually meant. So, you know, I would probably want to re-rank after we had a chance to talk about what we actually mean. And number two, more importantly, are we open to some other things that we think should be on this list, or is this the only ranking choice?
Yeah, well, this is really just where we decided to start with the work that had been done and one key item that had been raised in our discussions in the first phase of our work. But yeah, this is the time, like right now, in the next week, for people to bring forward additional items that we might want to consider. And then what we'll do is we'll put together a schedule of how we're gonna tackle these. But the prioritization process is a key part of that.
Yeah, we're certainly open, hopefully people have heeded the call for homework to add items to the ISA. But as Stephen says, this is the time to do it. If you're going to do it now, because we're going to lock in our work plan for the remainder and march towards the next.
So I maybe I missed the email or didn't read it carefully enough. But what's the process to nominate other topics for prioritization?
Send us an email or bring it up in this forum.
Yeah, our plan is to post yet another spreadsheet where we can actually dig deeper into these items. Those of you who were on the ISP task force 2 and 3 years ago, that was a process we went through. So I think the ONC team was also planning on putting together a spreadsheet where you could all add items and comment on them.
Cool. Clem.
Well, the list kind of looks to me like a list. It's a mishmash a bit. You know, it's like apples and houses. So some of them are specific, and a lot of it echoes some of the things we discussed in our meetings. It's not different. But I mean, you got lab orders twice. They're just different looks at it. CDC's in there twice. We almost need some constraint or guidance on what we're really talking about and how to list them. You know, there's individual codes, standards, and there's much broader things about just moving data.
No doubt. So this is a reflection of the concepts that have come input. This is an area where I would expect, number one, as Brian Bellendorf used to tell me, the Apache work group the Apache Foundation motto was "Patches Welcome." So if there are specific areas of clarification or specific areas of focus, I think we absolutely welcome that. And then I would expect that as we dig into these areas, we would better clarify the high priority areas and get into more precise clarity.
This includes none of the message side or the structural side that is in ISA. It doesn't, might be worth if everybody took a quick look at the categories currently in ISA, because this leaves out most of them, or at least probably two thirds of them.
Well, yeah, so this is not intended to be a complete enumeration of what's in the ISA. It is intended to be an area of focus for high priority use cases. Yep.
But I think it implies that everybody doesn't know the whole space. They're picking out the little favorite things and putting them in there. That's all. I don't know if it's going to be a good prioritization unless everybody is aware of what could be.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend that people look at the ISA, the ONC ISA.
This is Steve Eitner. Just to highlight one of the issues with electronic case reporting standards and a current issue that public health and providers are facing is that there's a disconnect between what standards some EHR providers may be building in or not building in to their electronic health record systems to utilize the HL7 developed ECR standards, and that will limit the ability of technologies developed by those providers to interface with the AIMS platform and providers successfully meeting promoting interoperability requirements as laid out in federal regulations. That's a significant gap with many real world implications coming up quite quickly as we enter into 2023, where those requirements are really going to be in large force across the country.
Indeed, and that's why we included it as a prioritization item. That was explicitly one of the reasons why we wanted to bring it up in this form. Hans, you've got your hand up.
Thank you. Yeah, following up a little bit on Clem's comments and maybe a clarification from that we can have on where to look. Looking at the ISA, it has a vocabulary terminology component, and then it has areas where it addresses messages, documents, services, a variety of different syntactical ways to get data across. Since we have the US CDI version 3 or the progression there, and which matches effectively to the ISA vocabulary area, are we going to want to look here in this conversation, not as much as that part where we could generally say, align the two up, make sure that they're in sync, but really focus much more on the syntactical types of standards, security, other types of standards, where the means of communicating such data is being addressed. And this can be a top 10 list where we want to focus on, make sure that they're most current, perhaps others as well, but that's the perspective. What in the messaging, document, services space, otherwise transport, do we need to enhance to make these use cases work and be reflective of the most current standards that are in play?
Yeah, thank you for that. So the way that I interpret the mission or the charge for the task force is to identify priority use cases. So, I think the note of vocabulary, code set, and terminology is well covered in the US CDI portion, is well taken. We'd really be looking at content structure and services exchange, but we'd be looking primarily at the underlying use cases. So for example, if folks are on the ISA page, the table of contents, look at content and structure. There's a section entitled care plan. And then there are use cases associated with care planning relative to content and structure. One might look at disease-specific care plan standards or document and sharing care plans for a single clinical context, click through, and get to a tabulation of implementation specifications, standards, focus level of maturity. We'd be primarily focused on the broad level headings, as well as the use cases associated with interoperability. And then we would then under that remit, look at whether there are missing use cases or priority areas, number one. And number two, Hans, to your point, whether there is emerging new implementation specifications or areas that need to be reflected in the ISA, as well as work on the ground relative to the existing items in the table of the ISA. So for example, there, as far as I can tell right now, is not a high level category for right to correction relative to either services exchange or content and structure. And so that would be an area where we would recommend the inclusion of a priority use case and then point that priority use case at the emerging work that's already been done in HL7. If we look at the laboratory space, we have existing work on ordering tests, receiving tests, and exchanging in vitro diagnostic tests and orders. This would be an area where we'd want to look at the Shield and Livid work and make sure that the set of standards and implementation guidance that's in the tabulation is up to date and reflects the current consensus, as well as help steer ONC with respect to ongoing work to establish this as a priority area to drive to greater maturity and adoption. David has his hand up.
Yeah, I'm going to send you an email with a list of things to consider adding, but I wanted one to just throw out at a for group discussion if anybody has a reaction to it. But it occurs to me that one place we ought to look for use cases to help focus ONC's attention, which I think that's the phrase you used, Aaron, which I think is that's my sense of the real value of the work we're doing here, is focusing attention on an area that needs attention, is to check out and make sure that all of the use cases that are associated with fire accelerator programs are covered or are at least discussed if they're missing. As I think most of you know, there's, I think, 6 or 7 fire accelerator groups, which represent basically, you know, people that have decided to go work on solving a problem by extending fire and providing implementation guides. And they are sort of by definition addressing emerging issues. And we should, I think, spin through that list of programs and make sure they're all captured in our discussions.
Yep, that sounds good. Ike.
Thank you. There are a number of elements in the list that are focused or heavily involve public health, and I can't help but wonder whether we should request that a public health task force either be set up as a separate parallel group to interoperability standards or as a focused subgroup within the interoperability work group to focus on those activities to make sure that we're getting good representation from public health, not just, you know, as a subset of this work group or high tech at large, but there are really some complex issues that need to get addressed, looking at certification that really requires some in-depth work. That there, you know, there's been a suggestion that public health certification of public health systems might be something worth exploring, but there are a variety of impacts that need to be considered, not just in terms of what standards might be utilized, but what incentives might be offered or how development of certification program might be funded. And what we're looking at is a cycle for beginning to implement that. So that might be a recommendation to come out of this, is to kind of collect those that are focused on public health and treat those as a separate, distinct class as a focus.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And the last incarnation of this work group as a task force, we explicitly punted on public health, even though we identified it as a high priority use case, because the public health data systems work group was getting underway. And so we do real-time discussion with ONC to make sure that we don't go over an area that's already well covered. I think to your point previously on ECR, you know, it's a good point to we've got the expertise in this group to be able to make some comment there. But we will continue that work of making sure that we're working with ONC and the other work groups and task forces to make sure that we're not over-covering areas, duplicatively covering areas that are already well covered in other places. Stephen.
Yeah, I would just a couple of comments. One, Ike, to you, to your note, the at the end of the work of the prior ONC Public Health Task Force, there was certainly a recommendation to ONC to consider keeping that group alive or rekindling it to do additional work, because we really were crunched for time in terms of what we could get out. As far as I know, that has not been set up yet, that group would be reinstated, certainly not in this year's annual cycle. So this may be an opportunity as we tackle these issues here within this work group to have a focused session, perhaps inviting some folks from CDC and or states and or HIEs that are involved in public health data transmission to come and talk to us specifically about what, if anything, they feel may be lacking from the ISA that perhaps we might want to recommend. Again, as we were noting earlier, anybody has the opportunity to provide direct input to the ISA, but as with our work on USCDI, if an item comes here and gets some airtime and turns into a formal recommendation, that may, you know, put some additional incentive behind it as ONC approaches it. The other thing I wanted to mention is just really want to encourage workgroup members to go back and read the reports that were distributed with today's meeting materials from the task force that worked on this last year. The format will look familiar to you, as it's very similar to the report that we are sending to High Tech tomorrow. But there were really just, you know, 7 recommendations. It doesn't take long to get through them. There was the initial document that was finalized in June, and then there was a supplement to that in the following month in July. So that work group did great work, and I think all of us should be sure to review that in detail. I also want to thank Jim Gerges for joining us. Thank all the people who've been putting in their rankings on the spreadsheet as we've been talking. We've gotten great traction, and there's a couple people at the meeting who are still in the process of doing that. And then also, Grace, your hand is up, but I was going to specifically call on you because you put a thoughtful chat up for everyone and wanted to give you a chance to cover that.
So wearing my patient advocacy hat here, I just want to hone in on the screen and the last one where it says the right to request corrections. So there's use cases and then a use case that supports a right. So that last use case is broadly applicable to all data classes and elements in USCDI, to all individuals with health information, and in support of all individuals' right to have their protected health information and eventually electronic health information amended in a timely manner. And in a timely manner is where I want to focus on. Right now, that is not happening, and that endangers patient safety. It compromises the integrity and data hygiene that we have for research, for guiding patient care. So I really want to re-emphasize the importance from a patient and care partner perspective, the last use case, which is in support of a right.
Yep. Thank you for that. And again, the intent here, and Grace, this has really come out of your very thoughtful, focused attention in this area. The intent here is that we have the right, but we don't have the standards and implementation specification that help patients execute that right efficiently. And that it would be useful to be able to do so. And you know, we've had a lot of discussion sort of the meta purpose of the ISA, but I really do encourage the work group to think about the output of our work as primarily helping ONC in a universe where one can, where there's no end of standards and implementation guidance to work on the most impactful output of this work group is focus and prioritization. In many areas, we do some legwork. We do a lot of pre-research for ONC that memorialize that research in terms of a set of recommendations, and that's incredibly useful work. And then the other major thing that we do is to put a big sign in a particular area and say, hey, oh, go focus here. There is important work to be done. So Wendy's put up the spreadsheet, really, really simple, a focus on prioritization. We're asking work group members to rank order across these areas. So, you know, just go in and put your 1 through 12. If you've done your job, if you've done your job well, you should have completely filled out and numbers inclusive of 1 through 12. We've been seeing, it's been fun. We've been seeing folks put their prioritization in on the fly, which is great. I put together, as I said, a very, very simple ranking. If we end up in the place where we don't have a lot of discrimination between areas, we can get a little fancier, but you know, simple is better initially. There's been a couple of questions. I saw that Les Leonard had a question about Shield and Livid and its relationship to LIS, EHR, and public health systems. The way I would think about those two rows on the spreadsheet are that the row 9 or number 9 is associated with the workflow of an order to result going from a clinician to a lab, back to the clinician, and to public health. So that's the workflow and life cycle of an order to result. And then Shield and Livid really focus on the workflow of an IVD, analyte machine, et cetera, through to LIS. And in many ways, the Shield and Livid work is, I want to say responsive to, but that's probably not the right way to think about it. It reflects a lot of really good thought that in the work that Stephen co-chaired, I want to say 2 years ago, although time has no meaning in COVID, so maybe it was 3 years ago. One of the focus areas of that work group was on orders and results specifically, and called on ONC to partner and collaborate with FDA to make sure that we had an inclusive set of information flows that included analyte machines and IVDs to LIS. So if you're confused about why we have two different lab orders and results workflows, one really follows the clinical workflow of order to result. The second follows the laboratory analytic workflow of sample to result, if that makes sense. Hung, you've got much more detail there. Please correct me for anything I've gotten wrong there in terms of the difference between those two rows.
Well, I think what you described in terms of the IV device to the LIS is more true of like what you said, the laboratory analytical workflow. Shield is intended to be end-to-end. So Shield would be going from the provider placing the order all the way from the laboratory getting the order, performing the test, resulting it, posting it to the EHR, and then also continuing on to sharing that result from EHR to EHR to public health agencies, all the way downstream to secondary uses, including research and real-world evidence. And so I would think of Shield as a little bit more inclusive of end-to-end.
That's right. And again, just to underline this point, that a previous incarnation of this work group noted that HHS has really all of the lines of regulatory oversight and authority that covers the full life cycle of a lab order to result. That regulatory authority and oversight is crosses a number of different agencies and departments inside HHS. Agencies and offices inside HHS, between CDC, FDA, ONC, and CMS with regard to CLIA. But that all of the places where that workflow occurs is covered by some regulatory authority and oversight for HHS, and it would be useful for HHS to put together basically an umbrella that covers this. So that's really the intent there, and I think it's worthwhile to think about these two things. Potentially, we can collapse them and use the SHIELD moniker to think about the broad workflow. Thank you.
And that. I think, Arian, the notion of collapsing makes sense. If you look at how people are ranking, clearly we've got a few items floating to the top. And again, or in this case, sinking to the bottom is the case, maybe since low numbers mean higher rankings. Yes, right. So, you know, we have clear enthusiasm for looking at SDOH standards, and we have an expert in our midst, you know, who's very involved in the Gravity Project and knows just where they are going with that. And then there's clearly interest in this laboratory area. And then I think sort of the third runner up is this ECR standard.
Let's let folks continue. I think Clem has yet to put his votes in.
Yeah, there's a few people on the call that haven't chimed in yet. I've sent each of you privately the link in the chat so that you can find your way there if it's hard to find your email. And yeah, we definitely encourage you to fill this out.
Yep, good.
David's comment, I thought we covered SDOH standards in the prior work group. What's new here? Yes, we certainly last year we moved SDOH forward a bit. It got a toehold in the US CDI, and then we were told that Gravity had more work to do on their standards and would have another tranche of recommendations to move forward at some point. Mark, can you comment on sort of where we're at with that? If we were, you know, as seems to be the preference of the group to make an early focus or refocus on SDOH, what do you see from your perspective as being the opportunity there vis-a-vis the ISA in particular?
Well, yes, the Gravity Project does have things in play, and I should do a better job of cataloging that internally to bring it to the group. But we are considering use cases and implementation guides for this year. So, for example, on the implementation guide, it's population health and research. On the use case side, which is more, we call them a use case because they sort of build off the clinical care IG that's already built. So things like social care use cases, and I can bring that back to the group. We've also, I just took a quick peek at ISA a couple of days ago, and there's a lot of things that we have done. This goes to the alignment point between ISA and USCDI. There's a lot of things that we've done that are not really reflected in ISA yet, and I'm in the process of trying to catalog that too, and bring that back to the group.
Right. And that's also David's point about, you know, there might be some helpful work that we can do at just linking FHIR accelerators, as well as the work that FHIR is engaged, that HL7 is engaged in, back to the ISA. And again, you know, we also have the right, even though it's not quite in our charge, we have the right to go back and contemplate meta recommendations. And so, we, you know, just thinking about this discussion, it might be worthwhile making sure that in the accelerator work that HL7 has, or that NCPDP has, or other standards development organizations, it might be worthwhile creating more explicit ties back to the ISA to make sure that the ISA can be a real-time classifier.
And one other thing to add, Stephen, to your question, for example, right, this first half of 2022, we're working on domains around health literacy, both personal and organizational, and insurance, under insurance, under coverage, that kind of thing, which should be ready by the middle of the, I believe it'll be ready by the middle of the year. So I can bring all of that back to the group in a more orderly presentation for people's understanding and perhaps integration.
We'll work shortly on putting together a set of focus areas for the task force with mini panels, as we did previously for the USCDI portion.
And Hans also had a comment here regarding the work that HL7 is doing on SDOH. Do you want to put voice to that, Hans?
Yeah, I think echoing a lot of what Mark said on the SDOH side, but then blending a little bit between SDOH and SOGI and LAB, there's a lot of work going on right now to enable communication of that as part of existing result streams and order streams in LAB to address that. So there's a number of different things in that combined area that are in flight, both at the standards level as well as at the implementation guide level.
Good. Grace.
I'm trying to get a better understanding of all of these use cases, with the exception of the right to request corrections, which was addressed, if all of these other 11 use cases have well-developed or somewhat well-developed standards. Is it universally understood that they do?
There are going to be cases like the HIPAA right to correction where there are missing areas in the ISA. There's no categorization of that area. There are going to be cases where there's well-developed categorizations of areas, but where the function of the work that we do is to promote and highlight work on the ground. So, almost the two ends of the spectrum. If you go look at the catalog of the ISA, we have existing items for Shield and Livid. We have existing catalogs of ordering and resulting standards. I don't think we're going to look at the ISA and conclude that the ISA is grossly missing a reflection of the work on the ground. That would be an area where the work group output might be an area of focus to say something to the effect of, hey, ONC with careful coordination of other agencies and offices and centers within HHS could well do some foundational work on the policy front to push a bunch of this stuff over to high maturity, and doing so would lead to significant improvements in care. So that's one end of the spectrum. Well covered in the ISA, every implementation spec that you might want to contemplate is covered in the ISA, but there's still a value of the work group to say, cool, it's covered, more work to be done to get it over the line and make sure it's available nationwide. The other end of the spectrum is HIPAA right to correction, not even covered, and it would be useful to make sure that the ISA at least contemplates that this right exists and that there are standards and certification implementation guide associated with that, right? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I guess in trying to, as I approach deciding this, I wasn't looking at it necessarily from a standards approach. So I didn't, when I was asked as a member of this group to prioritize these, maybe having a column to say, yes, standards available would have been helpful, because I think David made a comment saying that this was already a pretty easy, well, an easier choice to implement because it has standards developed. I didn't look at it through that lens. So my choices might've been slightly different. I'm looking at it at real world and exchange and impact on patient care.
I think it's fine. I think the primary output of this work group is prioritization and signposting more than its detailed work on implementation guidance mapping. But it can be useful to catalog work that's on the ground. Hans.
I've had my hand up a while. I don't want to complain, but.
Clem, there may be some issues with the thing. So if you want to jump in line, go for it. If you think you've had your hand up, I think you have some issues with your hand going back and forth.
Good.
Go ahead, Clem.
Okay. So I think across the board is that many of these topics are use cases where there is a section of it in the ISA, but depending on what we're trying to achieve, there's more or less available from a standards perspective. If you take ECR, there is the EICR standard that is already being used. So there is much more maturity of the standard that we're probably going to be talking about. If you're looking at lab orders in general, Shield, the full spectrum, is that it's much more that the that you have a variation. You have the standards that are there and widely used, but on the other hand, for SDOH and SOGI use cases, they are not fully up to par to support that. So 90% there, 10% in a critical area, they're not. Or in LIVET, there's a spreadsheet out there, but there's not a FHIR or other based standard out there. So I think you're going to find across these is that all kinds of different levels of maturity and availability in addition to some areas that are not recognized yet as a use case. Price transparency, not yet published, but work in progress. So I think we'll find them all.
Yep, exactly. I think if the work group puts on the hat of the main function, the main output of this work is signposting and prioritization, with a minor in identifying and uncovering areas that don't exist in the ISA, I think that's the primary output of this work group. Clem, go ahead.
Well, I really am troubled by the process. So somebody put up a list of things, and then everybody prioritizes them with inadequate thought of what the thing should be. I mean, the big three is research, care, and administration. And then research isn't even hinted at in that thing, for example. So I think we should start over at a higher level and then figure out what we really should be having. And apropos of what standard, if ISA actually does list the standards that exist, to answer that question, you can see what's there. But the other dimension that we fail on is that, yeah, we got these standards and people are using them, but there's no checks on how they're doing, you know, how well they're doing them. I understand that some big hospital systems, decoding to laboratory is supposed to be done and required to be done by the medical record group, not by the lab, which to me doesn't really compute. Anyway. I think we should make sure, and then so we could go deeper on some of the other non-lab standards to get more detail and structure and be useful. EKGs is an easy one, but we're not. So
yeah. So Clem, just as a reminder, and as we started the work group deliberation, we welcome additions to the list. We did cover research last time. If you've got a preferred categorization and other categories that you think are worthwhile for the work group to get into, I think that's very helpful. You know, the problem with something like the ISA is that it is almost infinite in terms of scope, and we're a finite time-bound work group, so we're going to have to focus in a couple of areas, which means that almost by definition, there will be many areas that we will not cover. But if there are areas of priority and priority focus, Clem, definitely would encourage you to submit those as areas of focus.
Submit and prioritize.
And prioritize.
Yeah, go ahead and contribute to the prioritization. David, you made a good point, which is that there are standards evolving outside of healthcare that might be appropriate for the ONC to consider and review. Do you want to comment on that in the context of provenance?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on this at all, but several people had sent it to me as an emerging standard from the major content vendors like Adobe, Apple, Microsoft, and others around verifying digital provenance and authenticity for PDF files, documents, etc., a cross-vendor standard that would allow a consumer to trust that they're looking at data whose source is provable. And it occurs to me that healthcare data should be a subset of the domain that is covered by that standard. We have provenance standards within healthcare, but they're obviously not widely supported once you leave the healthcare enclave. So consumers who download a document, for example, via their portal, might like to be able to prove that it's an authentic and unedited document when they present it to some other person outside of healthcare.
Yep. So, and David, yeah. Just as a note, not every element in the ISA is healthcare specific. So there are name standards through IETF work groups and others that are referenced, for example, for security standards and encryption standards. So that would be an area where, you know, I think the right thing to do would be to submit that, you know, submit the PDF provenance standard as an additional provenance standard to be included in the ISA, and you know, address it that way.
Right. No, that's my point. It should be something that we promote up if we think it's,
that's right,
if it's a valuable use case. And I'm betting more people. Yeah. Anyway, you got it. Cool. I think there's several other ones emerging outside of healthcare that I'll send you in your email, but I'll mention one is ISO 222, which is a payment remittance standard that the Federal Reserve is going to require adoption for in U.S. payment systems. And there's a work group dedicated to healthcare uses of the new payment standard. It's not a replacement for the HIPAA mandated, but it is
a remittance
standard.
Yeah, well, there's a remittance, and it is super confusing in healthcare, but we have remittance advice, which is the output of an adjudication process by the payer. And then you've actually got payments and remits, which are the flow of monies and documentation of the flow of monies. And so an 835 does not trigger monetary flows, or sorry, is not itself a reflection of a monetary flow. It's a posting of the output of an adjudication process that then triggers into the monetary flows. And so for people who are confused there, that's the connection.
But there, my point is that they are working on a healthcare use.
On a healthcare normalization of the actual payment and remit.
Right. And it just should be something that's tracked.
No doubt. Patch is welcome.
I did want to remind everyone that the general ISA site, like the USCDI pages themselves, does have a comment function at the bottom of every page. So anyone, any member of the public or the work group, of course, is welcome to go in and comment on items that are there and provide input to ONC. And ONC has a regular cycle of reviewing those comments and then updating the content in the ISA. Grace, you made a point early on that there is a page that shows you sort of recent changes to the ISA. So if people are following this, it's a nice place to go. Here, I'm going to find that page and stick it in the chat so people can follow that. But again, our role here really is to provide overarching commentary about what's in the ISA, where it should be heading, and anything that needs kind of redirection. And again, with regard to this voting process that we've begun, as additional items are added to this list, if there are any that people want to add, such as the provenance standard, we will invite everyone on the work group to go back and redo your prioritization. In fact, you're welcome to do that simply now after our discussion. You know, this is not meant to be set in stone, but we, as the work group chairs, will, you know, probably assess the ranking on a regular basis to help us determine where we want to focus. Again, it's still the case with all the responses that we have that the primary interest seems to be, and, you know, and really with insignificant differences between them, the SDOH items and the lab items. So I think that it's fair to say that we will start there as we plan ahead for next week. So Hung and Mark, if you guys have some specific ideas about the best, most fruitful approach that we could take there in terms of both reviewing what's in the ISA today and what are opportunities to advance it to support these use cases, I think that would be great.
Yep. And again, just to repeat something that I previously said, if this sounds squishy or unscientific to you, the main function here is for us to be able to focus in on a specific few areas to make high quality recommendations. We can't, as a work group, cover the entire topic of the ISA because it is far too big. We sort of necessarily have to pick a few areas, go deep, make high quality recommendations. We certainly are open to making meta ISA comments around the structure, process, and I think we've gotten of the ISA itself, and I think we've gotten some really good, helpful feedback. Number one, calling out that there's a need to coordinate ISA updates and accelerator or other other activities that are going on within HL7 and CPDP, X12, and others. Number two, that we need to be more explicit about the tie between USCDI and the ISA. And number four, that it would be helpful in addition to listing whether something is required in a certification criteria or programmatic, to be more explicit as we're likely to have multiple centers, offices, agencies, et cetera, making certification or tying ISA elements to programmatics be more useful to note or annotate which programmatic is attached to which standard. And then number three or number four, I forget where I am in my enumeration, the note that we should be thoughtful about standards development that's occurring outside of healthcare that has healthcare implications, and making sure that we have places to add that work back to the ISA. And as David noted, provenance information for PDFs and others, and payment and remit information could well be one of those areas. Cool.
So thinking again about SDOH and lab as our areas of current greatest interest, Mark, from your perspective, or really anyone else, other than reaching out to Gravity and HL7 to get a sense of the lay of the land there and request opportunities for ISA advancement or expansion. Anyone else have any other ideas for how we might approach that area?
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, we've got the ranking here is based on 12 points for Mark. I mean, I'm all for that, but how high can we go? Could we put 100 in and then we'd be sure that one got high scores?
No, we'll go back and I see Ken, for example, we'll remove that one if it's not a complete list. But the goal is just to force rank. That's all.
Well, I'm also confused because Livid is done, and Shield is not yet constituted. It's a group of people interested in that space. It's not a standards organization, and they could be very successful, but they haven't published anything yet.
Cool. And so we can get the lay of the land there. Hung, go ahead.
Yes, I was just going to ask if speakers would be welcome, because I think that for in terms of the lay of the land, we have prepared a relatively short, about 10 to 15 minute presentation we've given around to different agencies to kind of level set and introduce people to the concept of SHIELD and what it is we're trying to accomplish, and also where new regulations or standards would be helpful.
But is it a corporation? I mean, what's the entity?
The entity is SHIELD.
It's a collaboration between SHIELD.
What kind of entity is it? Does it exist as a corporate thing?
Right now, it's a government private collaboration.
Yeah, it's a collaboration between multiple agencies inside HHS, as well as primarily an intergovernmental at this point collaborative with some academic input, and then increasing external. External organization.
Okay.
Stephen put in a link to SHIELD through ASPE. As I said, right now it's primarily the notion of intra HHS collaboration across the different HHS bodies that deal with or have regulatory oversight for lab information.
Hans, your hand is up.
Yeah, just to add to the last comment Aaron made is that SHIELD does involve private sector participants as well. It's not limited to interagency discussions, but there are EHR vendors, there are device manufacturers, LIS, others are involved. And just a clarification, I'm one of the authors, editors on the LIVET guide in FHIR. I still have work to be done, so it's definitely not done yet. I wish I was done.
Hans, that being the case, it would be great to get kind of an overview of the LIVET work that you and others have done to kind of bring us up to speed with kind of what was the genesis of that, what's the work that's been done, what's the current state and the future plan, again, with an eye towards what, if anything, might we add as a work group to that discussion.
And Hung, I'd imagine Dr. Pappas would be somebody else we'd want to invite to testify. You can think offline about.
Yes, exactly.
We can work with ONC as well because he's the ONC lead for the SHIELD work.
Mark,
thanks. I wanted to lift up my comment in the chat and get some guidance. We're talking about use cases as a way of thinking about ISA, and we are working on a reference implementation to connect individuals and community-based organizations and social service agencies that may not have fire servers in their midst with clinical care settings using fire APIs. We think of that as a use case in a sense. Is that the kind of thing that is also relevant for the ISA?
I think the function here is to say there are some priority areas. Let's go make sure that that we are signposting those priority areas. With respect to the structure of the ISA, generally the ISA is structured around real world outcome based use cases. And then under those real world outcome based use cases, you would point to implementation guidance or specifications associated with that. So for example, if you had guidance associated with adapters to public health, to social services agencies and not-for-profits that did not have current fire capabilities, that would be an area where we might want to point that use case at the implementation guidance that's about how to connect social support organizations in. Does that make sense?
I think so. Thank you.
Yep.
Other comments before we open this up to the public? All right. Before we do that, let me just again encourage people to get to us with additional areas that you think should be potentially added to the list for prioritization, to enter your prioritizations if you have not yet had a chance to do that, so that we can plan ahead. Again, at this point, it seems like the SCOH and the lab area have the highest level of enthusiasm, followed by the ECR standards and care plans, chronic disease management, which we haven't talked about at all. All right, can we put up the public comment slide and invite people to chime in?
Yes, we can. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand. Once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause for a moment to see if anyone raises their hand.
And as we're waiting for public comment, just a meta comment that the focus of the prioritization is to focus our time with respect to testimony and deep deliberation. If you're looking, for example, at HIPAA right to request corrections, and you're appalled that it ranks so low, the easiest way to address that is to create a very simple set of recommendations. For example, we recommend that the ISA include HIPAA right to correction as a priority use case and point to the relevant work in fire accelerators. So there's as long as we're not devoting significant time and energy, we are certainly happy to carry forward recommendations in areas that are quote lower priority unquote. As I said, the main focus of the prioritization function is to let us focus our time and attention on going deep on certain topics. Is there any public comment at this point at this time?
Corey Smith, who's a member of the public and just raised their hand, has something to say.
Hello. Corey, you have 3 minutes.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great, thank you. I'll keep this very short. Good morning or good afternoon. I'm Corey Smith. I'm the Vice President of Informatics and Digital Products at the AMA, and just wanted to, respectfully request the group takes another look at average blood pressure which has been submitted for USCDI-V3, and I think I saw in the draft recommendations it was not being promoted into V3. I think we've had other folks come and support that, our clinical folks, and just wanted to, again, I think we've done a lot of work over the recent years to elevate the importance of average blood pressure clinically and in the standards world, and would just respectfully request that the group take one more look before making the official recommendation. Thank you.
Appreciate that. And I think we've made some progress. I understand that AMA and AHA have worked with Moink to make sure that there's a standard nomenclature for addressing the average of blood pressures. And we do make public comment related, or sorry, we do make recommendations here as this is an area of priority. So just appreciate that public comment.
Yeah, and to be clear, we do include a recommendation in our comments to HITACH for tomorrow that that the ONC work on that. So I think we heard you.
We heard you.
Don't see any other public comments. One of the nice things about Zoom is that we can actually see those ourselves, which is nice. All right, well, that brings us nearly to the end of our time. Again, we want to encourage people to submit suggestions. I think, Arian, the point that you made about how to go about advancing an idea like the right to corrections, keeping that very simple is a great approach. And hopefully we will have another document up that will give people a chance not only to provide these quantitative rankings, but also to provide more detailed commentary and even enter questions regarding the topics, as well as to add additional topics. Yep. I think what we may want to do is invite you all to re-rank prior to our next meeting. We'll take the ranks as they exist at this moment and use those to drive our work for the next couple of weeks. But if you can sleep on this, put it under your pillow, continue to consider now that you have a better sense of how we're going to use this input, that would be most helpful. So this is the list of our upcoming meetings leading us up to our final recommendations back to the HITACH in June. So we've got a busy time ahead, but we will only use it if we have work to do.
We'll absolutely have work to do. And again, when we get the detailed commentary, Grace and others, that's a great place to put if we have quick, easy recommendations and that are well formatted. I would just encourage people, once we have that list up, to drive those recommendations in. Again, open invitation for people who have additional priority areas to include those. And again, just want to reassure people that the ranking is entirely about focusing our time, energy, and focus to be able to go deep on topics, to be able to put together recommendations. With that, maybe we should conclude our meeting.
It's allowed, right on time. Thank you, everyone, for your time and attention. We will see you next week.
Thanks, all.
Thanks so much. Bye.